like a deer in the headlights or gum in your hair. What got you here will not get you there. Join us as business owners get unstuck in real time on the business building struggles we all share. Welcome to the Business Breakthrough Podcast. And here's your host, Esty Rand.
Welcome to episode 26 of the Business Breakthrough Podcast. I have today Rob Holman with me. Rob, welcome.
Hey, great to be with you, Esty. I'm already enjoying our conversation we had pre-recording, so I can only imagine what's going to take place during the recording. So thanks.
Oh, this is so exciting. And you have a really interesting story that I cannot wait to hear more about. So guys, Rob Holman is an internationally recognized leadership expert, executive coach, keynote speaker, and best-selling author who has a heart for authentic relationships and a true talent for equipping people with the skills and knowledge necessary for their success. Sorry, that was like super marketing writing. But he has written in Inc., Forbes, Fast Company, endorsed by top leadership people, all that kind of good stuff. And he's a serial entrepreneur, and he used to be a professional basketball player, and he lives in Pennsylvania with his wife and three awesome children. So Rob, this is an interesting story. You've got a bunch of can I say marketing gobbledygook as your intro, but I want to actually hear what's the story behind this? Because I think so many people today are, coaches, consultants, experts, and it's hard to separate the men from the boys. And it sounds like your story has really taken you here to be a legit expert, not one of these hey, cool, I'm 23, but I am the guru of the gods. So tell us, what has the journey been like for you?
Yeah, and it has been a journey, Esty, as we all live our own lives and life does happen. But I would have to say, purpose for me, the reason why I existed going into my senior year of college back in 1997. So for those listening, that would put me at about 43 years old. So if we go back a little bit, purpose for me leading up to this point was winning the next basketball game because I'm a big basketball guy, or hanging out with the guys and going drinking during the weekends, all this fun stuff. And I was caught up all in it. But this was until I was entering into my senior year of college. And I couldn't help but notice a major pain in my abdomen. And it was extremely painful getting in and out of cars. I love going to New Jersey Shore and going body surfing and everything. I couldn't even do it this summer because it was so painful, this mass. And so I conjured up enough strength and energy just to even tell my mom, I got something, And my mom said, honey, you got to go and get this thing checked out. And I said, Mom, it's just a month and a half until we go back to the college campus. I'll get my basketball physical. Everything will be cool. So I don't know. I convinced my mom to say, let's wait. So as soon as I get to the college campus, I'm 21 years old, and all this pain, all this emotion, all this challenge built within me because of this physical problem that I didn't know what in the world it was. I get checked out. And how doctors and nurses, they're supposed to play pretty cool, Esty. You know what I mean? You got to play. Even when something's up, they got to be smooth. But totally. I could see a look on their face when the doctor was really examining me. And he basically said, you need to get tests done right away.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Well, I walk out of that doctor's office about a half mile across campus to my college apartment. It was the loneliest walk of my entire life. I didn't even have emotion. I was numb to the world. Now, I'm going to fast forward a little bit. The condition, I got CAT scans, MRIs, ultrasounds. If there was a test, I got it multiple times. And the mass was so unusual, the doctors could not actually determine what it was.
Wow. That is so scary.
It is ridiculous. Think about 21 years old. You have all the, school, and I have basketball and relationships and family issues and all the different things that just life brings. And now I have this physical problem that the doctors couldn't even diagnose. Not to mention, they weren't even ruling out cancer. So as a human being, I couldn't help but think the worst. What, do I have cancer and I'm 21? What's going to happen to my life? And until what I'm about to share with you rocked my world. And I finally see an ultrasound specialist at UPenn Hospital in Philadelphia, who I'd not previously seen. And this time was going to be different than any other appointments, any other visits I'd ever taken with any doctor. They checked me out and said, Rob, I cannot explain what I'm about to tell you. Clearly you had a mass coming in and now you no longer have one. And the doctor tells me the first time, and you can imagine, I'm shocked like anyone would be, whoa, what do you mean? He says, Rob, I want you to intently take a look at the ultrasound screen, and I'm going to show you the great detail of what I'm showing. And there was all these previous test results up on different screens, you know, flown in and taken in from all the different doctors that I'd seen previously. And then he goes to show me more specifically of what he already mentioned. And it was like fireworks going off in the depth of my being. That's the best way I can describe it. I became so alive so fast. And you better believe, coming out of literally a modern day miracle, the doctors still to this day can't even, they don't even know what it was other than they'll chalk it up to a modern day miracle.
Wow.
And now here's the interesting thing, Asti. I still had pain. I start by telling my mom and dad what had happened after I left the doctor's office. Then I start telling my college roommates, and I kid you not, like one person at a time, I probably shared it with half the college campus within the next 24 hours. It didn't matter. They thought I was a little crazy. It didn't matter. All I know is that with every person I shared the story of what had happened, the pain left more and more. And within 24 hours, the pain left my body entirely. It's never been back since. So you can only imagine coming out of something like this. This was my awakening. This was a wake-up call for me. And your listeners may, you know, everyone has wake-up calls. It doesn't have to be as extreme as my story. It could be something that just comes in the midst of curveball, in the midst of business, in the midst of personal life. It's what we do with it. See, now coming out of this, I was asking a whole different set of questions I had never previously asked. Why am I here? What am I alive for? What are my strengths? What are my gifts? And little did I know, over 20 years later now, I'd be actually helping people discover, rediscover their existence and see that infused into their profession. And okay. It's just been an amazing journey. Yeah.
Sounds like it.
Yeah. I mean, I still don't have adequate words to describe what it was like. All I know is I became more and more alive. And it was a process. It wasn't like entirely an overnight thing. I was awakened to some things. But then in process, I started to see some things unveiled in my life. And there was it's like I had a different perspective on myself, on relationships around me. And next thing you know, it's like I start asking these series of questions. Different people now I have a perspective for are starting to be brought into my life. And then shortly after college, I started my entrepreneurial journey that's led me to start 9 different organizations in over 20 years, 3 nonprofits, 6 for-profit. And I would not want to be doing anything else than what I'm doing today, especially talking to you, because aww, I love your heartbeat. I love the work that you're doing to help create business breakthrough in people's lives. And you know this, I mean, when you help come alongside of someone and create this breakthrough in business, let's say, it goes into every aspect of your life. Okay. And so I'm just honored to be on your show.
Aw, thank you. I'm excited to have you here. I want to hear some more details about these different businesses. And I think that inspirational story, you know, kind of at the root of it is a big deal. You know, everybody has in their life their moment or moments. For some people, it is this like major thing like you're describing. For some people, it's a series of little things. You know, for me, I think it was a lot more of a series of little things. Well, as you're describing walking across the campus, I'm remembering I had gallstones after one of the births of my children. Wow. And we didn't know what it was. And even in the hospital already, I got really sick like a day after the birth. And they're like, oh, it's indigestion. Here's Maalox. And I was like having a gallstone attack, but whatever. Oh, yeah. Lord. You think they were qualified. And so like a couple weeks are going by and I'm like dying. I keep having these attacks. No one knows what they are. And they're just like, oh, it's post-birth pains. And so finally I was in so much pain and no one was around. And I called the doctor. He's like, you need to come. And I walked because I didn't live that far. Yeah. And I was afraid to drive myself. And oh. I was like, oh, it's not that far. I don't need a cab, whatever. And yeah. I'm walking like folded in half to the doctor. Like, I think I'm dying, but I'm not really sure because maybe I'm just like this overly dramatic postpartum person. Yeah. But no, he sent me straight to the hospital and then they had me on IV for a week. So that was fun. But yeah, no, I definitely, so all these like little, for me, these, I call these the little things, like my little things.
I'm listening to you. It sounds like a pretty big deal to me.
That was a big deal, but I don't know. I feel like I've had bigger. But each thing guides us on our journey to be inspired in what we do. And I really think that every person has their thing or things that they're meant to do in this world. And when we find that space, we really, really succeed. You know, we're living our mission. So it sounds like you have a really broad one, because you've already done 3 nonprofits and 6 for-profits. Tell us a little bit about them. It sounds like you did not go back into professional basketball, or did you?
Well, yeah, it's interesting. So I graduated from college, pick up the story a little bit, because I think it'll make much more sense if we've put some more meat on the bones. So I graduate, and I had this entrepreneurial bug in me. It kind of comes from my family a little bit. But I had like MBA aspirations. And people kept on saying my college basketball game was more for the pro level. And I was like, what's that mean exactly? Like, come on, thank you for your encouragement. And a couple minor league training camps opened up in the Atlantic Basketball Association, the United Basketball Alliance, Eastern Basketball Alliance. If it had an alliance or association at the end, SD, I probably played in that league. So they opened up, and I still had this entrepreneurial part of me. And so here I was and started my first company at age 21, which is a motivational basketball program business for youth. And then as I'm pursuing my professional basketball career, so interesting enough, like I would literally run this motivational basketball program business where we did motivational speaking in elementary schools. We had private coaching lessons we do for kids, clinics, camps. I mean, you name it. It was this holistic kind of approach, because I always viewed basketball as an avenue to instill life-changing values into people, especially the next generation. But I was pursuing a professional basketball career. The cool thing about my pro basketball life was I could play in these leagues, and they were weekend leagues in the Northeastern United States.
What's a league? Is it like a league? Like what I would pronounce as league, or it's different?
Yeah, it's a league. Yeah, league, yeah.
Oh, okay, so it's the same word.
Yep, same word. And so for me, there's a few different ones in the Northeast. And so you can literally have a 9-to-5 job Monday through Friday. You drive down, I'm from Pennsylvania in the greater Philadelphia area. I could drive to Delaware, play for a team out of Delaware, team out of Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And it may be an hour and a half drive, 2-hour drive. And then I'm there, and they put you up for a hotel for the weekend, and you're practicing Friday nights, games Saturdays and Sundays. And then you come home late Sunday night and do it all over again.
Oh, wow.
I didn't even have a chance to breathe. You know, when you look back at your life, you're like, how in the world did I do that? That was me during that season. We can always look back and say that. I'll be doing the same thing, 10 years from now in this time period. However, like that time, so I was like, I was going. And I was going after my dreams. I was going after my entrepreneurial dreams. And then all of a sudden, some opportunities opened up in even the NBA that never panned out. And then I meet my wife. And before long, after meeting my wife, I'm like, okay, I think I need to hang up my high tops now, because of all the time spent working out, practicing, and going for my dreams in the NBA. So never made it to the NBA, but thrilled just to have an opportunity to be in the mix there a little bit. And so when I met my wife, at that point, I had 2 businesses and no longer a professional basketball career. And so I was able to designate more time with her and our relationship, but also pursue my entrepreneurial dreams. And so—
Okay. What was the other business? We have motivational basketball program.
Yep, so I had that. I had a basketball clothing company. So had that for 10 years. Had the basketball camp business for 10 years, a basketball clothing business. We had our own street brand of basketball clothing. We were big in New York and Philly and a lot of, and our competition was And1 back in the day, and Nike basketball and everything. So those, basically I had those 2 companies and pursuing a professional basketball career all by the age of 23. Then I meet my wife around 25, 26, still have the 2 businesses, but starting to think about, wow, 26, 27, like, do I continue this basketball thing? And by the age 27 and a half, 28, professional basketball was gone. And all of a sudden I have another wake up call, and I really feel like I need to start a church. A non-denominational church.
Interesting.
And I started transitioning away from these 2 family-owned family businesses that were growing and everything like that. And I started transitioning away, and now I'm starting to embrace. I never went to seminary. I just really felt this shift in my heart, my soul, to start building a new community that like-minded, like-hearted, and start really doing some wonderful humanitarian and philanthropy work surrounding that. So all of a sudden now, transition out of the 2 family businesses, now my nonprofit world starts, kicks off. And then that, you know, just then it moves on from there and started.
So can anyone start a church? Do you have to be, because like I'm Jewish and rabbis have to be ordained. Now anyone who wants can start a synagogue, but to be a rabbi, you need to be ordained. How does it work in the church world? Do you need like certain qualifications, or can you be like, hey, like I'm inspired. Listen, God clearly saved my life. So I am qualified to tell the world all that God stuff.
Yeah, it's so weird. I there's some people with more of a formal, and I find this in different walks of life in the coaching world, more of a formal, they go through their certifications, same in the church world.
Okay.
Seminary back, underground Bible, seminary background. I had what people would call a very alternative road. and all of a sudden, you know, I love God. I love the Bible. But I was more mentored behind the scenes from people that maybe had seminary backgrounds and had all this. And I was mentored. People would say I was discipled. I was all coached. I was all these. And all of a sudden now I become awakened to some different areas, some different things. And people kept on saying, Rob, you have like a pastor's heart or something. You have a teacher. I'm like, but I'm not qualified. You're like, to your point, I'm like, I'm not qualified. Who am I? And people would say, but you've started companies. You've employed people. You've helped, you know, mentor people and build them up and develop people. And like, isn't that what it's about at the end of the day? Building genuine community? And I was like, I guess so. Although this is new to me. And before long, SD, like this non-traditional alternative road that I took me down. And now, isn't it interesting? I actually license and ordain more formal people that come out of seminary because they just take a look at different aspects of my life and different things that are happening. They're like, can I get together with you? Like, Rob, do you have an ordination process or a licensing process? Because I want to be a part of what you have going on a little bit. So I don't know. Maybe it's the humor of God. I honestly don't know.
Sense of humor, personally, I definitely do. So I want to hear, like, so you ran for profits, and now you're doing a nonprofit. And I work with a lot of nonprofits. I'm a do-gooder at heart. I worked my whole career was in nonprofit until I started my own business. And when I started, I was on the shelf. Like, should I make this a for-profit? Should I make it a nonprofit? And I was like, you know, I love helping my clients fundraise because I look at it as sales. Hate fundraising myself, which means I am not going to be a nonprofit owner because that is one of the big requirements. So I decided to do it as a for-profit, but I'm like, it's like this weird blend of nonprofit, for-profit. As long as it sustains my life, it exists. That's how I look at it. There's a difference and so many similarities. So when I say that nonprofit and for-profit, and I think people have this big misconception that I'd love for us to break today in our breakthrough. A nonprofit is a business. It is short for not-for-profit business. And so I find that there's a really simple way to explain it. A business, regular for-profit business, does a set of activities in order to earn money. Mm-hmm. People understand that, right? Non-for-profits get money in order to do a set of activities.
Yeah.
Both have money, both do activities. Both need to run at a high professional level. You need marketing, you need systems, you need branding, you need that. You need everything the same. It's the mission and the vision and the way you execute it. That's different. What would you say?
I could not agree more. I mean, I always say it's like, hey, whether it's not a for-profit business, like it's an exchange of goods and services from one to another. I just kind of put it like that. And I'm like, okay, so nonprofit maybe doesn't go in the founder's pocket per se or anything like that because they just want to put it back into the nonprofit and be able to expand their reach or whatever the case may be. Where for-profit, you know, that money, looking for a net profit, looking at, you know, maybe the founders and the president, they want to put some back in the business, but maybe they want to take care of their families and leave a legacy behind as well, or some other reasons too. But at the end of the day, it is. But I think there's a lot that nonprofit leaders can learn from for-profit. And I think there's a lot for-profit leaders can learn from nonprofit.
Totally. But I think one thing that you said that I want to contest, nonprofit leaders and owners should take a salary if this is their full-time job. I get way too many people. And by the way, I've seen so many business owners who are like, they put it all back in also. I'm like, dude, do you not need money? Because why are you doing this? Like, is this a hobby? Like, are you just bored? But for nonprofit people, I find that so many people are really altruistic. They really believe in this mission and they don't take enough money out of it, if any, and they burn out and they can't do it. And for me, I want my people, and my people includes all my listeners around the world, to realize that a non-for-profit is a business. And if you are dedicating your life to this, and this is your full-time job, it's a job.
That's right.
Get paid.
That's right. That's right.
So that you can dedicate yourself to this. And your salary is just as important as anything that anyone else gets paid here. Because you are the one who makes this happen.
No, couldn't agree more. I was about to say, amen, sister. No, I honestly, I see that passion come on. I could not agree more. I want to be really transparent with you. For years, I struggled with that. I really did struggle with that until I began to grasp what you're saying.
And that if now, you don't take money, you can't dedicate yourself. I've seen people burn out from the most amazing causes. I had someone who was running, this is such a cool thing, okay? She was running this, I can only call it a clothing store, but it wasn't. Yeah. So it was a nonprofit clothing store for, I want to say like the lower middle class. Okay. And this is like, you know, the new poverty that we have today in some level. Yeah. It's people who don't qualify for government subsidies and they don't qualify for all these programs and they live in communities that are affluent overall, but they live in like the less good house. And they rent and probably won't hope to buy. And their clothes are just like a little less nice. And they don't go on the same kind of vacation. And so this kind of relative poverty, if you will, that they experience, that they want to look like everybody else. They want to feel like everybody else around them. And they're just short of it. So she opened this clothing store for people like this, that they can afford something. They can't afford the super high end. And she would get donations from wealthy people who sometimes, you know, bought something, didn't really need it, or just wanted to contribute to help out. And so it was high-end clothing at super discount prices. Some of it brand new, some of it recycled, but like all really, really good quality. And she was doing it just, you know, as a volunteer. And everyone started loving it. And it started to take over her life. And she reached out to me and I was helping her with the systems because she didn't have no business background. You know, so we were doing inventory systems, trying to help her keep track and trying to help her figure out the financials. And then she was paying people to kind of man this store, quote unquote, you know, that was run out of somebody's basement. Because again, it was this like kind of undercover thing going on. It was a secret, you know, it was past word of mouth. They never really did advertising. People just heard about it like, hey, I could get Gucci for like $50. I'm coming. Okay. I'll be there. You know? And she said to me, Esty, I don't know what to do. Like, I don't have time for this. I have to give it up. I said, take a salary. She's like, no, I can't take money from this. I just got to do other work and get money so I can keep doing this. I'm like, we're not having the same conversation. Okay. Yeah. Why would you go out not do this, which people want and need, so you can get other money, so you can maybe do this a little bit when you could do this more, get money from this.
That's right.
And then help people more. It's like this non-compute.
Oh, and so much of it's in our mind. I had this mindset, Esty. So I started the church and that was growing and so much happening with that. And then I felt like I wanted to work myself out of a job with the church and get back in the business world a little bit more intentionally. So I started a company, a coaching community, a coaching network to help small business owners back in 2008. And that was called Business Vision Network, no longer exists. And during that time, I can remember I was in the nonprofit world. I was getting petty salary at that point, but I still had this mindset of like, I'll take a lower salary. Because I was so with purpose and I was into serving people and I had the right heart. And I was like, well, I'll just help other people prosper in many regards, but I'll just stay down here financially and otherwise. And that's my, I'll chalk it up to that servanthood filled heart, you know, in that way. And that's kind of the mindset I brought. So when I re-entered back into the business world, the for-profit business world, I kept that mindset. And then I remember a business mentor of mine said, hey, how are you doing in business after like the first year? I'm like, we're doing great. He goes, how much are you paying yourself? I said, nothing. He goes, oh, you're doing great, huh? Makes a lot of sense, Rob. And it made me make a call. He says, don't feel bad about it. You have a purpose. You have a cause. You have a vision. You're a cheerleader of people. You love sharing a vision with people. You're an influencer. Don't feel bad about it. You can, you know, there's a balance in it all, certainly, you know, but don't feel bad about it. And so that really helped me begin to grasp a little bit more of what you're talking about. And now I'm in the non-for-profit world and I'm also in the for-profit world. And the common denominator is Rob is who he is. Yeah. Regardless of where I am, regardless of fine, and that's so liberating, Esty. And one practical thing I have done that helps, I find people that kind of can come alongside of me so I can focus on the purpose and the vision in that sense. Maybe other people can handle a little bit more of the finances and you know, we can have that dialogue, but maybe they're driving it a little bit more than me. That's what's helped me. Might be different for other people, but that's kind of liberated me. I still share in that. but I don't feel like I have to drive it. Right. So I'm free enough to now purpose and be that people person that God's created me to be.
And someone else makes sure everyone pays their dues.
There you go. There you go. So thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah. I like that also. And I think that's a really good solution. You know, some people, even when you begin to understand, and I think some people in the for-profit space have this same struggle with charging money for what they do, and charging the right amount of money for what they do. And it's so funny. I recently did a course called Marketing for Marketers. I did it live. Now people can purchase it, you know, pre-packaged. And I was teaching graphic designers and copywriters and all these, what I call frontline marketers, marketing strategy to help them, you know, upgrade their rates and also upgrade their knowledge so that they can give the clients a better ROI on what they're doing. Cause the clients kind of expect them to know marketing. They don't actually have any training. So I came in to kind of fill that gap. Yeah. And one of the questions I kept getting from people as they were signing up for the course, well, this helped me have the confidence to charge what I'm worth. And the question to me makes no sense. If you know you're worth something, why wouldn't you already charge it? You know that this is like inherent in the question is that dichotomy of I should be asking for more money, but I can't because like I feel bad. Like, what if they don't have it? But what if they need my help? Well, what if you go out of business? Like, what about that?
Exactly. Yeah.
And then what if you can't help anybody? What about that? And I guess for me, that was never my problem, clearly.
But I think your point's so well taken, because if one does have that mindset, that heart, and you know, people pick up on that. You know, a prospect is going to pick up on that.
Totally. You know, and they'll talk you down.
There you go. You're talking about negotiation, man. You're out of the conversation.
Yeah, you have no leverage when anybody can be like, oh, can you do that cheaper? You're like, well, and they're like, oh, and can you also have it done by tomorrow? And you're like, and they're like, amazing. So I'll pay half price and you'll have it ready by tomorrow. And they're and so this happens in for-profit and nonprofit. And I think, you know, one of the solutions that you just said, so one solution is like, I'm saying, you know, man up. This is business and you need to charge what you're worth. And for some people that works, they just need that confidence boost. And for some people, they're really like you're saying, you know, and you could sense from your passion and your personality, I'm just here in service of others. And it doesn't matter if I am a graphic designer or a coach or a restaurant owner. Okay. There are restaurants. I know someone, the restaurant is always struggling because the owner is always giving out free food and he's always extending credit to people. And so it does not matter your industry. It doesn't matter if you're nonprofit, if you're service, or if you're a product. Business, separate, this is such a good solution, separate the financials out, get a different bookkeeper, get an external bookkeeping company who takes care of all your billings, they take care of your deliverables, you are the good guy, you are still yourself, and you don't touch money, because you can't tell people that they have to pay you to do things. Get someone else, you know, like me, who has no problem telling people, listen, pay up or ship out, sorry, we love you, but this is a business.
Yeah. Well, can I ask you a question? I think you're bringing up some amazing things. Why do you think it is that people don't charge more? Is it because they don't value themselves, or they don't have the experience in the way that people think they should have? Or what do you think it really is? I mean, it's a confidence thing to some degree,
I think,
right?
For different people, it's different. I'll tell you a couple of the issues I've come across. One is that some people really have money phobia. Like they're the same person who, if they were employed, they wouldn't be able to ask for a raise. They're always uncomfortable handling money. They're uncomfortable, you know, and they tend to overpay and overspend, you know, rather they don't like to look at their credit card statements. They don't want to deal with it. Like money's kind of like this dirty thing. And like, I don't want to deal with it. Like it's this necessary evil. And like, we need it for something, but like, I can't, you know, and I can't ask people for it. And like, if I have to spend it, like they just, you know, they don't like it. So I think that's kind of one group. And I think the other group, it is a confidence thing. You know, they are concerned that if they charge too much, the people will say no. They will insult them maybe, you know, who are you? I actually once had a guy say to me, when I was cheaper than I am now, actually, this was a couple years ago. And he said to me like, what's your rate? And I told him, and it was cheaper than it is now. And you know, this podcast might go for a long time. I don't want to get any numbers to myself. you guys can DM me for my information. Exactly. And he looks at me and he's like, Esty, I have met hundreds of business consultants. What makes you think you're worth that? And I just look at him He was mean. Oh man, he was mean. Oh. And I'm looking at him, I'm like, I've met hundreds of business consultants too, and I don't know anybody who can do what I do.
Wow, come on.
And that, I think, is why money doesn't bother me. You know, again, I am a money person. I've always been. Like, I ran my first business when I was 10, and I made really good money. Calculated my cost of goods. I had no problem charging people.
Sure.
But I think that for the people that are on the opposite, a comment like that, and I haven't forgotten it, clearly. This is 4 years ago. I did not forget it.
Yeah.
But it doesn't affect me the same way someone else who might, like, broken, you know, like, I don't know, you know, what really, why am I charging that? You know, and everyone has this like imposter syndrome, like, who am I? You know, I don't have an MBA. I happen to think the fact that I dropped out of my MBA program is an asset because I do small business strategies and that's my focus. It's the freelancers, it's the solopreneurs, it's the micro businesses, you know, 10 or 20 employees and under. And it's a completely different focus than most people in the field. And and so I look at what I have as an asset and I think, so I tell you what I really think. I tell you what I really think. I think it's fear. I think it's just fear. I think every single group, the common thread is they're afraid of money. They're afraid to charge. They're afraid to, they look at it as confrontation and they're afraid to be confrontational about it. And that's the root of it. And so money's only kind of like this external. And I do think there's a certain element of dislike for some people that they look at it as this evil thing. But overall, I think it's fear. They're just afraid.
I think you're hitting on it. One thing, when my mentor back, you know, when I re-entered in the for-profit business world, as I mentioned before, when he said, you know, how much you make, you know, how well are you really doing, Rob? What are you paying yourself? And I said, I really started to go down the road of like researching what is fair within coaching fees, hourly project, you know, everything like that. And which is, what's the market rate? What's fair?
Totally. That's what I based everything on. And you look at your positioning in the market and I look at how experienced am I, and my rate has gone up. I'll tell you, usually when I raise my rates, when I meet another coach or consultant who's charging more than me, who's less qualified, I'm like, wait, I know what you do because I know you. I know what I do because I'm me. Yeah. And I, again, and it's not a judgment and it's not a criticism, but like, I know what I'm capable of doing for clients. I've seen what you're capable of because I sometimes get your client leftovers after you mess them up. How are you more expensive? You know, and that a lot of times has raised my rate. Or sometimes when I just see what I do for a client within a certain price frame and they're like, whoa, like my friend paid quadruple for this and this is better. And I'm like, I think we're undercharging again.
It's not the end of the year when I take a look at rates. I need to actually do a mid-year review.
Totally. I'll do it whenever it comes at me, because I think business is an exchange of value for value, which is exactly what you said, an exchange of goods and services. I drill it down even further, because let's say you're doing a barter, right? So again, then it's service for service, but it's value for value. And as your value changes, the exchange rate should change as well.
That's right.
And so I strive to just become more valuable every day. And then at random points, it hits me like, hey, I'm more valuable.
Yeah. Come on. I love it. Yeah. It's good stuff.
It's so critical. So I love that solution. One, get over your fear. Two, if you can't, hire someone else who isn't afraid. Let them do it. And I actually had, oh my gosh, this is a great story. So I had this nonprofit, school. And the guy had, I cannot even tell you how many tens of thousands of dollars in outstanding tuition payments, because he was exactly this personality we're describing of like, oh my gosh, of course I understand. Yeah. You got to pay for little, you know, Jimmy's braces and I get it. And it was a private school. And so he was constantly suffering, constantly fundraising with like, you know, I think when I met him, he had $75,000 in outstanding tuition payments from like that year, like a lot of money. Okay.
Sure.
And he's lost to pay all his teachers. And this is his very full-time job to be the dean of a school. And he hired this, we'll call her a secretary, but she was way more than that, you know, the type.
Yeah.
And told her, you know, do me a favor, work on the collections a little bit. Like, we really need to try to get this money in.
Yeah.
Boom, boom, boom. Oh. Within 3 months, she collected 70% of what was outstanding.
Come on. Wow. Okay?
And it's not because she was some genius. It's because she had no problem asking for the money and then following up the next day and following the next day. And she didn't have that person. It's okay. She said, listen, look, your tuition's outstanding. And she wasn't mean. Your tuition's outstanding. We need to pay our staff and our teachers. And you want little Jimmy to have after school basketball. And we need to pay that coach too. So we really need your tuition payment. Now it's been outstanding for about 6 months. And the money started coming. So I think that fear that people have, but they can't pay, but this, if you just ask the right way, guess what? they figure it out.
That's right.
They're all paying for something, guys.
That's right.
And it's just you that's not getting it.
You'll never ask what you're not worth asking for. I mean, honestly, you've got to believe in yourself. I always go back to just as a human being, every human being has value.
Of course.
And this is before we even do a thing.
That's the root of it. Someone actually asked me like what I do. And there's actually a Jewish prayer that I say every morning.
Yeah.
And it is basically, God, my soul is pure. That's kind of like the gist of the prayer.
Yeah.
You start your day with that. You know, I've got a soul. I've got internal value.
Yeah.
And I feel like that, you know, business is so tough and people will knock you every day. And you'll meet guys like the guy I met who's like, what makes you worth anything or more than anybody else? And you're constantly selling yourself and defending yourself, if you will, like what you're worth, quote unquote. But that kind of check-in of I'm worth more than my dollar rate. I'm worth more than my market value. Yeah. I think that's a big help too.
Esty, I've really learned that. I've done work in the Middle East and been over to Afghanistan a number of times and been to Dubai, been to Israel, been to different places. And the thing I really love about the East that the West can learn a whole lot from is, you know, in the West, we let what we do easily define who we are. We just do.
Yeah.
Like we're at a network.
You meet someone. Exactly. What do you do?
What do you
do?
Who
are you? But when you say, who are you? People will tell you what they do.
What they do. It's a natural response.
Yeah,
and we're
it's
so
your definition.
Programmed and everything like that. So all of a sudden now, we have a good work day. We have a bad work day. We ride that emotional roller coaster. We let affect actually who we are as a human being. And I'm like, do you understand you're made in the image of God? You are made in the image of God. Unique and significant apart from 7.5 billion people on the planet.
It's pretty cool.
And if you just get even a little taste of that, let alone fully embracing it, there's no telling what you can begin to accomplish.
Hear that. Guys, for our listeners, this is a little different than our usual. we're taking you to church today, guys.
We are. No, I hear it.
You know what? Someone asked me, you want to hear, this is really funny. So I get in an Uber, I think it was last week or 2 weeks ago, maybe 2 weeks ago already. And this guy, and I don't have a yellow star. Okay. So I don't know why he said this to me, but he's like, ma'am, you're Jewish, right? Can I ask you a question? I'm like, am I wearing a sign? What did I do? Like, it's not, you know, like Jewish males do have, you know, Orthodox males have these like trappings. I don't. Like, I'm not really, but fine. Okay. Somehow he figured this out. And I'm like, sure. And I kid you not, this is a real conversation. Okay. And he goes, why are Jews so successful at everything they do? I was like, that's a little bit of racial profiling.
Yeah.
And I happen to know a lot of Jews that aren't like, but that's a really interesting statement just out the door. So that's an interesting statement out the door. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to take it at face value. I'm not going to contest it. I think that every society, every religion, I don't think there's like I don't know, but fine, leave it alone. And I'm thinking about it and I'm like, you know, I'll tell you, I think when you think, or if a person thinks the universe is just this random place, whatever I do is whatever I'll get. Whatever I put out is what's going to come back to me. And, you know, lady luck, you will see kind of what happens. And so when I have a bad day or things are going poorly, I might think it's over, you know, or I think like I'm failing or I've ruined everything. And I get very lost in it. Whereas for me, I'm a God believer. I am. It's part of who I am. I don't talk about it that much because I think it weirds some people out, but it's definitely a huge part of me. And I think it's a big part of my success because I get knocked down all the time, Something I'm trying to do doesn't work. And I said, I think if you want to say anything, you know, if you want to say, why are Jews so successful? It's just such a weird statement. But I think that if you have, and this has nothing to do with being Jewish, it's every religion. When you believe that the world is not random, you believe that there's a higher power, whoever that higher power is, I don't care what you call it. And you believe that someone's got your back, someone's looking out for you, that every setback is really just something you don't recognize that is going to be better in the future, or that you needed this for your own growth, or whatever it is, but you realize that it's not random, that you're on a journey to somewhere, you have a purpose here, and this is just a setback. And this is part of that journey, part of that purpose, and someone smarter is looking out for you. I said, you can keep going much more. I said, if anything is a hallmark of success, I think it's that.
No, I love it. And do you know what I call that? When you start living a life like that, there's these beautiful, I call them sacred intersections in life. A person you meet and you don't chalk it up to randomness. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, that person has got my back. There might be a deeper purpose in this. And you may not even fully know, Esty, what it is yet. But there's something deep on the inside of you that begins to come alive. Like, you know what? Now I'm filled with a little bit more anticipation that there's this piece of the puzzle that's now put in place. And I don't know when the next one's going to be put in place, but I think it's going to be sooner than later. And this really excites me. And it now the child in each one of us can begin coming alive and staying alive, remaining alive. And I think for us not to at least have a foundational conversation like we're having today about it, because so much stems out of our belief system.
Totally. And I think even just when you separate that belief of the world is random and the world has purpose and I'm random and I have purpose, that's a game changer in terms yeah. of your ability to get over the inevitable disappointments you're going to have in any business and that's the right. frustrations. You know what happened? This really just happened last week. I like to send referral gifts to people. When someone refers me a client, I just think it's nice. I think I really appreciate that someone thinks of me. And so yeah. I'll send them a little something. And so we sent a referral gift to someone and I get this message on LinkedIn. Hey, Esty, I got these chocolates. Why? Oh, I found the note. I didn't send you Jack. I don't know who Jack is. Was this maybe meant for a different person? And I'm like, as soon as I saw her message, I knew it was meant for a different person. I knew exactly what it was meant for. It was a misspelling of the name. And one of my staff people who I sent to send this gift sent it to the wrong person. So I write back, it was totally meant for the other person. Wow. But don't worry, clearly, someone up there wanted you to have a good day today. Enjoy the gift. So I'm not going to take it back. And she's like, oh my gosh, no way. Should I pay you for it? I'm like, no, you should not pay me for it. I am just a messenger. I am not in control for whatever reason. I said, listen, either I owe you something I'm not aware of, or we have yet to experience what I owe you this gift for. But in any case, enjoy it. And I think for someone else, you know, that might've been like a super frustration with their team or a super annoyance. And it was money. It totally cost money. It was so random. And I think the way we talk to ourselves about these things so much depends on our framework, you know? And for me, the framework was like, I'm obviously not in charge. That was so weird. Why? Why did that just happen? I think that helps you keep going. I'm obviously not in charge. I'm doing the best I can with what's in front of me. And and looking at every misstep as an opportunity.
Yeah.
Because of it.
That's right. And it speaks to, for me, listening to you, it speaks to stewardship. Like for me, I want to be a really good steward of whom and what God's entrusted in my care. And life does happen. And I want to, I think it's, I'll be mindful of time, but I think also it's important for people maybe to hear that, you know, your belief system does matter in that way. But also beginning to, join hands with others with maybe even a similar belief system that's value driven, et cetera, is really important. But also, because now you're not alone, practically speaking, and you have a community that begins to surround you in time, that when you're tired, when you're down and out, they'll raise your arms up and hold them up and say, when you don't think you can, I know you will. And I'm here for you. I think that's important. But equally, I think it's also important for us to be intentional with people that think different than we do, to be stretched. And so I think there's a place for both. You know?
I love that. Love that. You know what? We had John Lee Dumas on the show a couple of weeks back. And one of the big pieces of advice that he gave, episode 22, guys, if you want to check it out, it's like a mini episode. He said that the way he keeps going, he has this mastermind group of people who are in a similar space to him. And that helps him, you know, with sometimes 20/20 hindsight, but that's support. And I've heard this again and again from people on the show, from clients, and myself as well. You know, when I get stuck, I have a business coach, I have a business mentor. Like I do this for a living. I help people build businesses, grow them, problem solve, and I practice exactly what I preach. I have my own business coach and mentor. Whenever I get stuck, I reach out. And I have other business owners that, you know, I'm friends with that will just talk to that. And just having that network of people that are same and different. I want to take your two things and make it one entity. That there are similarities and differences. There are places where you can totally get along. And you see eye to eye, whether it's you're in a similar industry or you're of a similar background or you have a similar faith or you have a similar work style. It doesn't matter. But there are similarities where you really can blend. And there are differences where you can get a complementary perspective to your own, because to surround yourself with yes people, like for what you could tell yes to yourself.
Sure. Good point. A really good point. Yeah.
I love that.
I love this conference. This is so encouraging to me. I mean, honestly, it really is.
I'm so glad. So tell us what you're struggling with now. You know, you were able to overcome this fear of charging by just stepping out of it, letting someone else take care of the finances, which is, I think, is such a great piece of advice. What are you still trying to work out right now?
Yeah. So I am in the content business. And so my company is called Holman International. And so I wrote my first book. It was released, published last October and officially came out in November of 2017. And I'm working on my second book, and it's going to be a series of books. And then it's going to be, I'm going to compile all that content and come up with a much larger book. So there's a whole game plan. For me, Esty, one of the challenges is I have like deadlines.
those pesky little things.
There you go, those things. And so I have deadlines. Some of them are internal because I'm a deadline person. Some of them are external. Some of them are a combination of both. And when it's just not flowing, the content, I'm like, what do I do? I have a deadline fastly approaching or something. And it's just not flowing, you know? And so I'll sit at my desk. I'll talk to inspirational people. I'll talk to different. And I just find there's some seasons where it flows and there's some seasons where it doesn't. So I'm okay with that, that ebb and flow. I really am. But when that deadline's approaching and it ain't really flowing and you're being paid and your salary comes from being a content person with a core message in your heart that your audience is really waiting for, and marketing people are waiting for you to get the content, your editing team and all these different things. And yet you feel a little bit dry in a season. Right. You can start getting a little nervous. Totally. Like, oh boy, it's not coming. So that's where my prayers really kick in, Esty. I don't know. That's where I can get stuck on occasion because there's so much on my heart. But again, it doesn't always come out.
That makes sense. No. And I think, you know, in every industry, in any creative industry, now here you're talking about content creation, but in every creative industry, whether you're an Etsy seller or a graphic designer or a chef who's trying to craft some new recipes, you know, that creative spark, if it's not there and like, you know, the diners are coming and there's gotta be an evening special because the restaurant says every night there's an evening special and it's different and that's the branding of the space. So I think in every creative industry that happens, what have you found that there's any, something like, I know for me, it's music. I'm a music person. When I'm stuck, it's always music that kind of like opens my mind. Do you have a thing that you found like opens your mind or not yet?
No, I do. I do. I just need to do more of it.
Okay. But you sit down every day religiously. Like you have your sacred time where you sit down and you're going to sit there until something comes off the pen or until the time runs out.
Yeah. I not every day, but I'm pretty consistent with it. You know, so but I try to have a chunk of time more or less every day. And sometimes that's 30 minutes and sometimes that's 2 hours or more. I think for me, something that has worked that as I'm probably listening to myself talk, I just need to go and do it. It's like that Nike slogan, just do it. Sometimes you just need to. I find myself really inspired is when I get alone for a longer period of time and just be still. Because I'm on the go a lot.
Right. And creativity comes when we quiet the logical mind. That's exactly, the creativity is not in your logic. And so when we're so busy and we start overthinking, this is where it breaks down. And and then that pressure ruins it even more because the pressure pushes us even more into kind of a problem solving mode or a like frenetic cycle of like, I need to do this, but I can't, I need to do this, but I can't, I need to do this. And there's no creativity in there. None.
No.
Creativity is being killed.
There's not. So for me, and I do begin every day with a time of gratitude, meditation and prayer. I just do. And some mornings that's 10 minutes and some that's an hour. So it's not like I don't have that every day, start every day. What I'm talking about is like taking a half day, like consistently, even if that's like once a week. And as a small business owner, I could make an argument and rationalize, I don't have the time. There's no way, all the demand in my time. But no, you do what you value.
No, you can make the exact opposite argument. As a small business owner, I'm doing this so I can have the freedom to work in the way I need to work. You know, I have this guy now, we're doing a work-life balance, okay? And I usually do this with entrepreneurs, and we make schedules according to people's, you know, chronotype, which is their chronobiology, how they interact with time. Because for whatever reason, Western culture thinks that night people are lazy, and it's just not true. They're often more creative. And so if someone has their best work time between 1 and 3, they're a deep night person. Why would you push yourself to work at 9 in the morning, where no matter what time you go to bed at night, 9 in the morning, you're always fuzzy? Why would you? Because you're a small business owner. But I had this problem. I was working with a guy who was an employee, and he's a night person. He's not as deep as my 1 to 3 a.m. guy. His best work is usually somewhere between 10 and 12. Okay. What's he supposed to do? He clocks in to the office. And so as an entrepreneur, instead of saying, oh, I can't justify it, I would say the exact opposite. As an entrepreneur, one of the key benefits is the ability to work according to your best workflow. So if your best workflow is to take half a day, hello, the boss said you should do that.
I might have to talk to this boss.
We're the hardest. By the way, the worst bosses I have ever met are entrepreneurs on themselves. They might be super great to their staff, but I have never seen a worse boss than how an entrepreneur treats themselves. Mm-hmm. Never, never. Not in any company, because they would get sued. Like HR would shut them down. Yep. You know, and an entrepreneur will be like, no, you got to work more. I don't care that's 1 in the morning. You have 5 more emails to answer. And it's like, who are you, slave driver?
I hear you. And one of my biggest parts of my message, my core content, is lead yourself first. And I think, go figure, right? But for me, the whole Sabbath principle of that, a day of rest, you know, but taking that into my life and saying, okay, so in this season where I really long for content and taking more chunks of time than I have prior, you know, prior months, and be consistent, get that in the schedule and do that once a week. I just have to determine what that looks like for me and then block it out like it's my largest client.
Exactly.
And that's something that I could really do a whole lot more of in this season of my life. I still have daily time. I still have weekend time of that kind of Sabbath principle, but that half day consistently where I can just be. And I just find when I just settle down my soul, and for me, Esty, different people do different things, but for me, if I am beside a body of water, it just refreshes my soul.
Me too. I'm a beach person. I need to get to the beach once a month or I'm sad.
There you go.
I can never live in middle America. Yeah. I have to always live on a coast. It's like my requirement.
So I'm taking my coaching notes from Esty. Seriously, like I'm going to implement something that I do share with people on what to do. But for me in this season, being that much more intentional about it, I think is going to be really, really valuable. And I'd love to report back to you at some point, like, hey, Esty, you'll never guess what? I've never written so fast in my life.
Yeah, you got to check in. And I think that, you know, for everyone to apply this in their way, that you have to work how you work best. You know, the world is moving back to this place and it's fascinating. I love taking this kind of broad view. Like one of my talents is like from big picture to detail and vice versa. So I love kind of stepping out of these details sometimes, looking at the broad view. We used to live in a small business universe. We used to live where the corner baker was the corner baker and your shoemaker made your shoes. And like this was a small business universe. And then we moved to the conglomerates, to this, you know, massive and the corporate entities and this whole thing. And now we're kind of returning to where each person brings out their unique talent, their strength, and can run a business and can make their income like that. And we still are stuck with this work mentality from the corporate era though, you know, where everybody's got to have like a if I'm a real business, I'm a 9 to 5 and I'm kind of clocking my hours and really, you know, I'm a 9 to 9 and really I'm like a 9 to 5 and then a 5 to 9 or, you know, vice versa. Yeah. You know, I like to say, you know, a lot of days I'll work 9 to 3 and then 9 to 3. That's like my work schedule.
Right.
But we don't have to. Yeah. Because we're just meant to work in the way that we work best. And running your own business gives you that freedom to learn about your best work styles and to do it not in someone else's framework. Whether that someone is an individual or that someone is a culture that's trained you over decades that this is what work looks like. What work looks like is you doing your best work. That's what work looks like.
That's right. And what I'm also getting from you, which is so timely, is something I'm going to begin to implement is my best work hours are like 7 to 10 in the morning. I'm such an early bird. It's crazy. And so, but typically I'll have meetings with people at those times.
No, 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 no.
Right. See, because I've always had this, heart. Wow, I don't want to give people sloppy seconds of rock. So, but changing that, a little bit of that mindset, I'm still, you know.
But it's not just sloppy seconds. Yeah. You're missing part of time and workflow.
Okay? There we go.
So part of it, it's not just when you're at your best. It's when you're at your best for what type of work.
There you go.
You know, conversational work is often better. Again, I don't know your schedule, but evening is the time for connection. Yeah. So if that is suited to what you're doing, then that works. And sometimes afternoons are better as things start to kind of slow down. You want to work not only with your best time and your chronotype, but also the workflow of the day, and time itself has the power for different types of work. And a lot of this comes from a book I'm reading now, which is amazing, called When by Daniel Pink. Okay. Amazing.
Yeah.
Highly recommend it. He's become like my new favorite author of the moment. I'm reading everything he's written now.
I love it.
But there's a huge amount of scientific research on this. I'm not pulling this out of some like metaphysical thing. Yeah. There is a lot of metaphysical wisdom that I learned about this, but all of the scientific research matches.
Yeah.
The types of work, the types of day, the human energy flow, where everybody kind of starts their day, you know, a little bit lower, gets to a peak kind of early mid morning. For everyone, it's different. You know, so for you, if you're a super morning person, your peak's going to be 7, 8, 9, you know, for some of us later people it might be like 11, 12. I know, again, my super night person guy, his peak is like 12, 1 in the afternoon. That's really unusual. Most people peak much earlier, but everybody's on a different schedule. And what you do best at that time is what works. And so your focus is, let's say, this creation, your best creative time, where for night people, it'll be night, for you is early morning. That doesn't mean it's your best time. It's your best creative time, and your best meeting time might be a completely different one.
So good. It's what I need to hear today. I mean, I honestly, because, and for me, the beautiful thing about being your own boss is you can coordinate your schedule. So now me beginning to, you know, after my time of gratitude and doing a couple things in the morning, going in that creative mode.
And you're already in your meditation. You've already quieted your mind. It's a perfect flow. Exactly.
And now starting to, you know, those switching or changing those. For me, evening meetings, I do some of them, but I think those afternoon meetings for me and for the workday flow and for other people is going to make much more sense. So I think I can start to make that shift. And I'm really waiting with anticipation on this one, Esty. So thank you.
Amazing. I'm so excited. This has been really fun. And there is so much value here. This is amazing. Aww. So I like to surprise my guests. You might not be surprised if you heard some of the shows already, by asking you for a quote to send everyone on their day with.
Yeah. Much of the world either sees the glass half empty or half filled, but I always see it overflowing.
Ooh. Oh, I love that. I never heard that.
Yeah.
I love that. Yeah. I love that. Oh my gosh, we could have a whole conversation just about that. Okay, but we have to stop because our time is up.
Perspective.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. No, we can have, I want to talk about competition, and I want to talk about enough room for everyone. And I want, there's so many things I want to talk about. Okay, maybe we'll have to do this again. Guys, Rob, this was amazing. Where can people find you if they want to learn more, if they want their cup to runneth over? Where can they get you?
Yeah, probably two places. My personal website is robholman.com, and that's Rob with two B's. And then second is my book website, which is leadthewaybook.com.
Amazing. Love it. So guys, you can check out Rob Holman on his site. You can find all these links at sdrand.com/26. And a bunch of this advice will be written up as well, as we always do in episode summary. So click subscribe if you haven't yet. What are you waiting for? Really, guys, come on. And leave me a review. Tell me what you love. Tell me what you love more. Tell me what you thought of this God conversation. We've never done this on the show. I'm very curious as to your opinions on it. And subscribe, review. We will see you next time.
You've been listening to the Business Breakthrough Podcast with Esty Rand. If you're looking for a breakthrough in your business, reach out at sdrand.com/breakthrough to be a guest on the show. Everyone's got a business struggle. What's yours?